and welcome to the Most Best Podcast. I am your host, Zach Williams, and...
The best way to spend your Saturday afternoon.
The best way to spend your Saturday afternoon. It's a shame, really, that you can only really do it with two people, because I feel we're really hogging the activity for everyone else.
Is that because you just don't bother buying a third mic? Because... Couldn't you just get a third mic and get a third person?
Essentially, I could get a third mic and a third person, but I'd need to upgrade my
mixer.
It's in the works, but at the same time, I'm very poor. So.
Alternatively, just make them take turns to speak. So you can only speak one at a time across three people. But
We could try to get two people
Side
next
by side
to one mic, maybe. We'll give that a try.
Turn take, like.
Excellent. Well, you may recognize this voice from our pilot episode of what was to become the Most Best Podcast, but with me today in the Most Best recording studio, I have our friend, returning champion, Mr. Drew Taylor.
Hello, all right.
How's it going, buddy? How are we?
Great, thank you. Yeah, it's nice to be back, so thanks for having me back. It's nice to be my first repeat guest.
Unfortunately, Alex Perks came back for an episode.
Oh, okay.
So you're the second repeat guest.
Yeah, well, I also stammered then and said repeat twice whilst I was trying to say repeat, so that was quite a sort of pun on repeat then. So
meta comedy.
yeah.
When we first recorded, I was but a fledgling podcaster, should we say. Yeah, I didn't really know what I was doing. So it's going to be interesting, because we did a straight-up interview last time, so this time I'm going to really subject you to the full Most Best Podcast experience.
Good. Well, that's partly why I came back, you know, just to get... I felt like I was missing out, because I've listened in to most of the episodes since then, and I really enjoyed the interview we did, but it seems as if you've upped your game a little bit since then, so it's nice to come back and get that experience.
Figured out what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Excellent. So what we'd like to do at the top of the episode, to introduce you to... Actually, I do this. I always interrupt myself at this stage. We are looking for a name for the Most Best Listening Audience, because Most Best Listening Audience is longer than the name of the podcast.
Yeah.
Not very that snappy. So I'm asking my co-host with Mo-host at the moment, what you feel the name for the listening audience should be. It's kind of just been hovering around twats for a while.
Okay.
So you can stick with twats, you can go to something else.
Well, like a lot of people do this thing, like Lady Gaga's, like, what do you call it, like Little Monsters, she calls her fans. I think in terms of the name of the podcast, I think Besties is quite the, not that I use the term Besties.
Besties!
I don't use Besties, to be honest. It's not a phrase I would normally use, but if, you know, they're sort of friends of the show, aren't they? So
I really like that. Yeah, it's a lot more welcoming than twats.
Yeah, exactly, because twat is pretty, I don't know.
Pretty on the nose. Oh, Besties, that might stick.
Yeah, I like that.
So, what we like to do to introduce you to the Besties is a game that I've devised called Dice to Meet You.
Yep.
So, I was going to go back to the episode that we recorded and figure out what three words I'd ask you to describe yourself in, because that's where the game came from, so I didn't have to necessarily ask people what three words. It's down to choice. It's a 20-sided dice. You roll it, and the number lands, and you have to do that many words. It could be one, it could be 20. So I went back to listen to our episode, and it turns out we didn't do that.
Yeah, I think you started the episode after.
Yeah, this is how far back it was. We first recorded for what was, at the time, the At The Time Of Recording podcast as well.
Yeah, that's right. It was a different name, wasn't it?
So, are you ready, as my co-host with the Mo-host, for the second time to play Dice to Meet You? Three, for fuck's sake. The whole idea of this game is to not do three.
Do it again if you want. You can do it again.
Never re-roll. Never in this house.
It's only the first time we've done it with me, isn't it? So three words to describe myself.
To really sell yourself to the best.
Sell myself. It's tricky. Busy? That's not really selling myself. I'm always busy.
Important.
Yeah, busy, helpful. No, I'm going to scrap that. Fun to... Oh, no, I fucked up. This is a lot harder than I thought, because trying to find out three words is really tricky.
Imagine if it was 20. Would that make it easier, though, do you reckon?
Yeah, because then you can get a bit of a flow with the sentence going. Yeah. And the efficiency of the words is not as important then, is it? Because you can sort of, you know... But ideally, especially with comedy, it's nice to be efficient with word usage, isn't it? Get things done. But yeah, I think a nice guy.
A nice guy. Yeah. I'd agree with that.
Yeah, cheers, man.
You've come in, you've called our audience the besties.
Yeah, well, it's, you know,
You're bringing a very good vibe. I've had a lot of antagonistic guests recently. Yeah. I recorded with Tom Evans, and he went out of his way to make it as painful as he can for me. So it's nice. I like it. It's a nice, relaxing atmosphere in the studio today.
Something that comes up a lot with sort of gigs and stuff lately is like you might get booked for something that's not a comedy night. It's like maybe a sports dinner or something like that, or like a corporate event. And they're like, oh, you know, you're not going to be racist or sexist or anything like that. You know, it's like, no, why would I want to? Like, you're trying to entertain and not offend, you know? So I think, yeah, entertain, not offend is a nice way to approach things, really. So
why would I come into a room and purposely paint a target on my
face?
Exactly.
If you're sexist, you're going to immediately offend half the room. Like, I don't know. I think it's just sort of the misconception with old school comedy, isn't it? And people think that's still how things are sort of done. Like,
yeah, and you do get the risk of every now and again someone you may not know coming through. So especially on like the open mic circuit where it's a new face to see what they're like.
Yeah.
Then it you know, I admittedly went for shock when I first started. And I'm coming away from that now, but I never went as far as like alienating a specific group of people just because they were a specific group of people, for example.
Well, like, the idea of offense is tricky because arguably anything you say could potentially offend anyone, but it's just the thing of saying something that's nasty or mean-spirited, you know, that's, I think, is the differentiation there. But I think with new comics, if they get the wrong end of the stick, so to speak, I think, like, rooms tell them pretty quickly. And comedians as well, a lot of comedians take great pleasure in sort of correcting other, it's not done like that, it's done like this. You know, so I think it won't take long for them to learn. If they don't, it's more for them, you know. But
exactly. So when you were last in the Most Special Recording Studio, I believe you're just over 3 years into your comedy career.
Yeah, it would have been, and it's nearly four now.
Yeah, it's coming up on four.
Yeah, four, it'd be four at the end of March, beginning of April.
And a lot has happened in the meantime between those recordings, especially. You seem to be, as you say, you were, you know, going to describe yourself as busy.
Yeah.
You seem to be someone who is content, or not content, rather, with just looking to book the gigs. As the beginning of the other episode, you said people see you as a promoter, but you much rather see you as an act.
Yeah.
And you do seem to be someone who is, well, as I say, you know, things that since we last recorded that come to mind, The Lion, for example.
Yeah.
I'd love to talk to you about that. You've been doing Tales from Wales again with Stefan.
Yeah.
You've got your Mirtha. Are you doing Mirtha again this year?
Yeah. Well, my involvement with that is sort of helping the festival organisers like sort the venues out and pick suitable venues and then sort of like help with the acts and like the run of the live shows, that sort of thing. So it's not sort of a booking aspect, but because the people who organise it, they control the purse strings and they sort of got an idea of who they want to book, but they don't really know live comedy works in terms of, you know, how the room should be and setting up a live show and that sort of thing. So that's the way I sort of help with that. But yeah, that'll be coming up now at end of April again, so.
Drew Taylor, comedy consultant.
Yeah, it just gone, didn't it, when we spoke last time. It's coming up again at the end of April, so looking forward to that. Should be good.
Excellent. And as well, and I want to deep dive into each of these. You have got your first, is it your first hour-long show? The Taming of the Drew?
Yeah. It's going to be about 50 minutes, I think, because I want to build on it over the next sort of year or two. Like, I'm not going to go to Edinburgh this year. And I think I was going to go to Chicago on a holiday. And it's a Chicago fringe, but after sort of reading into it, it's quite, like a bit of a low key rather than a high profile sort of festival that was run by a lot of volunteers and things like that. And they emailed me Christmas on Boxing Day, I think it was, saying that, oh, it's cancelled this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's cancelled. It's in August, mind. It's cancelled because we can't get enough volunteers. And I thought, well, we've got 8 months to try and sort that out. But I don't know, perhaps it was more to it than that. I'm not sure, really. But that was my intention, to go there as a holiday and perhaps do the show there and sort of, you know, may not have got an audience, but just sort of something different, you know, but enjoy the holiday as much as anything.
Exactly.
So, like, a lot of people say, are you going to Edinburgh this year, Edinburgh? And I think people put a lot of focus on, like, it's Edinburgh is by far and far the biggest sort of comedy festival in the world, I think, but I'm not going this year. I'm going to do other little festivals, little bits here and there, but not go there until perhaps a year's time, so summer 2020, I think I'll do this show there.
Yeah. Because
obviously working full-time as well, you can't commit to the same level of input as you can. I suppose arguably you could if you sort of, you know, worked every minute of every day sort of thing, but it's difficult to commit the same level to your comedy if someone who's a full-time comic.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so gigs are professionally 2 or 3 times a week, but I still work full time as well. So that's the tricky aspect, really. So it's just trying to manage your time well and being sensible, you know. So I'd rather put 2 years of sort of progressive work into it rather than rush through it and then maybe not get the best, most of it.
And have you found it was difficult writing? Because I've never seen the show. Does it have a through line? Or is it just like a collection of the basically, what's it like writing and trying to learn that length of a show?
Well, that's the sort of bit I'm sort of right in the middle of now. There's no thread to it. There's no sort of set theme or story to it as such. It's more just an hour of stand-up, 50 minutes of stand-up. And it was an exercise for me to push myself on from doing 20s and 30s. Just to write more and have more material up to 50. And then beyond the show then, when I'm doing 20s and 30s again in club environments, I hopefully have a much better 20, you know, because if you write another 20, 30 minutes, there should be an element of that you can take to club sets then as well. So it's a writing exercise as much as a sort of a personal sort of show as well. Like,
and the memorizing of it. And what I've been doing is I'm reading up a lot on the structure of joke writing.
Yeah.
And I've always been obsessed with just like syllables and how they work in sentences. I love the idea of just pulling a lyric out of a song.
Yeah, so the pattern of the words and the sounds of the words.
As long as you can figure out the like the rhythm of the syllables, you can fit in any words you want into there. So do you do that with your jokes? Do you, you know, do you find the exact wording from them and memorize them that way? Or are you aware of just the concept and you know how to deliver them?
Well, at the moment, up until over the last three years, 10 months, whatever it sort of works out as, I've got... the way I would do things is like I'd write the joke out word for word. I may like think of an idea, walk the dog, sort of work it into something, but then I'd write it out word for word and that'd be how I deliver it. And that's still how I deliver it. It's like the perception of the audience is that you're sort of you're off the cuff and you're so clever and you're so sort of, you know, affable. But I do things sort of word for word, which for the sake of other comedians who gig with me sort of fairly regularly, it must be very tedious to them. If you see me once or twice regularly, it's the same sort of stuff really. I try in now to work more towards like having maybe a set thing you want to work around and being a bit looser with how you deliver it. I'm seeing if that works. Obviously, it may not, you know, but it's just, I feel as if maybe I'm being too rigid and too sort of, this is the words you must say in this order and that is the joke. And I think, I don't know if that's the best way to do it. Like, possibly it won't work for me, but I'm trying to sort of elaborate on things a bit and not be too formulaic with it. Because what do you do when you sort of, you said about remembering stuff. Do you find it tricky then, remembering your material and things?
I am working on a 10 minutes at the moment because when I first started, I've been doing very jokey jokes, you know, very wordplay, pull back and reveal kind of stuff. And I've been working on a 10 minutes that has callbacks, a bit of a through line, and the second half of it, about the 5 minutes, is basically around the concept of, I'm just going to ruin the bit for anyone who hears it now, me telling a short story about the time my cat became the victim of a hate crime, which is a true story. It genuinely happened. But I make the story go on for 5 minutes, which could be told in a sentence, because every time I introduce a new piece of information, I go back to the beginning of the story.
Okay.
And I found it easy to remember, because if I can remember those beats, the this, that, you know, the 10 things I remember, I can kind of then dance around the punchline bits in it as well. Because I know it's got one of those feels of when something's funny and then stops being funny and comes back being funny. So the amount of times I go back and repeat the same sentence but add on to it every time. So that's been easier to remember because it's got that trigger words throughout it that I can fall back on.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
But the most time, I tend to know the general structure of the joke and try my best to remember it.
So you sort of get a version of it out rather than the exact wording sort of thing.
What I do as well, I'll record my sets. And if I like the specific way that I told the joke, then transcribe that, write that down word for word and try learn the joke that way. Because if it worked, me saying it a certain way better than it had at a different set, then I'll write that down and then I'll remember that joke as that then.
Yeah. Okay. Like, I don't know if it's, I think I got quite a pretty good memory, realistically. And it's not something I've discussed with the comedians really, or how do you remember material or what you've done, but I think it's a repetition thing as much as anything. And like, you've written in the first place. It's like sort of if you're trying to learn lines someone's written for you, that's a bit harder because they're all new to you and it's a block of sort of writing this. Not, because you've written it and you tend to write jokes, write one, and then you write another one, and you tend to learn that one before you write the next one. You sort of almost only learn a new bit, I suppose. But I think because you've written it yourself, it's a bit, I find it a bit easier to remember it then. And of course, it's like the repetition of doing it on stage 10, 20, 30, 40 times and over the period a couple of months, like, so.
Do you vocalize your jokes to yourself before taking them on stage? You know, just walking around the house, saying them out loud, just so you get used to delivering them?
I definitely did that at first, like first 10 gigs maybe, because I look back to it now, and I was quite a nervous performer at first. I used to get really, really nervous before I go on stage, and perhaps I wouldn't sort of show it, but I found it quite difficult. And I think I learned to perform and learned to be on stage, like everyone does, I suppose. But yeah, at first I would definitely go over the words and repeat them and talk them through, and I would like sort of chant them, not chant them, but sort of make sure it's going through.
Yeah. Them.
But I think all of a sudden that sort of stopped, and I think it's like a lot of things, you know, like when you're at the drive, you stop gripping the wheel and that sort of thing, you know, with two hands, 10 and 12 and things like that. But yeah, maybe 10, 15 gigs and I stopped doing that then, because you just build it on that material.
And then again, you gig fairly frequently as well. Yeah. So it's not as if you're stopping saying it altogether. It's just you're taking it to the stage at that point. And
yeah.
I guess it's learning how to say it in the house is different to then learning how to say it to a room.
Yeah, and jokes, a lot of people are sort of have input on this as well. Like a joke will definitely end up differently from when you wrote it. You think, oh, like that's how that goes, that'll work. And then after you deliver it a couple of times, it'll probably look quite different, or not quite different, but it'll definitely change on stage because it's how it actually gets perceived by the audience. Because there's no substitute. There's no substitute for delivering it to a live audience. Even saying it to your partner or your friend in the house, you know, it's not the same as delivering it on stage, and that's the real way of working things out, to be honest. Like, the joke will be pre-written before you go on stage, but it may well modify a little bit because of, oh, try this, we'll try that, or don't do that, don't do this. I did a bit in the week, I was talking about, like, sharks eating people. And, like, you know, a lot of people are frightened to be eaten by a shark. And I just, the idea of, well, it's quite arrogant, isn't it, really? You're thinking a shark wants to eat you. There's billions of tasty seafood in the ocean, and the shark wants to eat you. But I asked an audience member, are you frightened of eating by a shark? And they said, yeah. And I said, oh, it's a bit arrogant, you know, continuing the joke. But then it felt as if I was picking on them a bit.
Yeah.
So I think it needs to be a broader delivery to the room rather than you are arrogant, you know. I think so. That was something I learned there. You know, try it a different way, and
you do like a show of hands. You're scared to eat.
Yeah,
then you've got
more
people in the room involved in it rather than the individual.
But then you may do it 3-4 times. Think, actually, it's not really working, and maybe not bring it all together. But try it a different way again. You know,
I think that's you know, it's interesting talking about it. The evolution of a piece of material like that.
Yeah.
Like if like in my notepad I'm working on the moment is the same bit just written out possibly like 20 different ways just because I'll sit down to rewrite the bit because I work in a call center. I've got a lot of free time with my hands.
Mm.
So in between calls, I'll be just writing material out to as a memory.
So you can't leave your station, but you can do a little bit while you're
there. Yeah. And it does help morph it in that because the mood I'm in the day or what's been going on will change the way I write out that set or that joke then. And it's interesting to have all those different alternatives with it. So going back to what we were talking about originally, do you feel you've got like a defined set in place then for this 50 minutes? Like, you know what jokes are in order or?
There'll be a fairly rigid sort of section A, section B, that sort of thing. It does work through sort of chronologically, but then the start would be the start and the end would be the end. And a couple of times in the past, I forget a bit and I think, I can't go back to that now because the jokes before it and after it won't work. But as I've sort of grown in sort of, just as a comic, I've forgotten a bit and think, actually, I can just go back to it. And you become more confident in your sort of ability to, well, this is where my set is going now and the audience will go along with it. So yeah, the start is the start and the end is the end, but the bits in the middle could be interchangeable as you go along.
Just came to mind. Have you ever hit a callback in your set to a joke that you then realised you've forgotten to say?
No, I haven't gone off that far with it, but I've gone to say a bit and thought, oh, that won't work because I haven't done the bits before it. So I've gone to do it and stopped myself, and then you think, oh, I come off stage in 70 minutes now instead of 20. But yeah, I haven't gone as far as delivered a joke and everyone's thinking, what's he on about? You know, I think it
was Richard Herring I saw who did that in Cardiff. Hmm. And it was one of the big ending jokes of his set, and he hit this punchline so confidently. But then the colour went out of his face, and he went, I've completely forgotten to do the joke that sets all of that. excellent. So that you're doing it in the Leicester Comedy Festival.
Yeah, I'm going up on the Saturday and doing Tales and Waves with Stefan on the Saturday and the Sunday. And then he's doing his solo show on the Saturday, I think. And mine's on the Sunday then. We come back on the Sunday. So stay over and do 2 days there.
Oh, amazing.
And then I'm going to do it in Brighton and Ludlow later this year. And I think nothing else planned in, but things will come up, you know.
But you've got that show to work on, as you say, giving yourself the 2 years to let it grow and evolve.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, sort of, I think it's a thing that people get sort of quite wrapped up in, but it's a fact. Edinburgh's very expensive as well.
Yeah.
And as we said off mic before we started, I have a new kitchen put in the house, you know, so.
Congratulations, by the way.
That's my, no handles. So that's my Edinburgh this year, you know, new kitchen. New kitchen. Kitchen instead, yeah.
Walking around your new kitchen, saying your jokes to yourself.
Yeah.
As I say, you're a busy man. It's not all about the Taming of the Drew, which I love as a name for the show, by the way. You gig club gigs very frequently, and you set up. Is it the Lion?
The pub, the Lion in Treorch. It's a very busy pub. It's sort of the guy who runs it, Adrian. It's kind of the hub of the town. A lot goes on there. They organise a lot of different things that go on in the town, and he's quite proactive in trying to promote Treorch as a town and the other local businesses as well, not just about his pub and things. But yeah, there's a room above. There was the pool room, and they've converted it into a small, it holds 72 people, a comedy club. It's only running once a month at the moment. They did have ambition to sort of make it Friday and Saturday every week, because arguably, if the population is around there, if people went there sort of frequently or infrequently even, you could get a turnaround of 72 people once a week. You know? But at the moment, it's been some superb nights. It's a beautiful room. It's really, really good for comedy, but it's just struggling with numbers in some ways. Sometimes it's been 50, 60 people in, sometimes it's been 8 people in. So it's just getting the consistency and getting the sort of name out there, really, and making people aware that, you know, there's a comedy club in the Rhondda, and it's not rubbish because it's not in Cardiff or something.
I think
there is a misconception of that, and it's a shame, really, because people think, oh, well, it's local, so it must be crap, you know, which is, as we know, it's not the case. Same with bands and stuff, you've been in, it's not the case, is it?
No, of course, man. People need to realise that the superstars of the future all started grinding in, you know, local scenes, local pubs, DIY shows. And you need to do that to learn what you're doing to be able to then evolve and make it good. So people, and this has come up on the podcast a few times, people need to make more of an active effort to get out and see local comedy and see local bands, not only to promote the scene and people doing it, but to stimulate the local economy, getting money back behind bars, for example.
Yeah, but I think beyond that, I think there is an aspect of local talent and that sort of thing, but some of the comedians who've been there are some of the biggest comedians in the UK, if not.
Oh, really?
If not globally, like Craig Campbell has been there. Who else? Lloyd Langford, Tony Law has been there. Tanya Lee Davis, Bethany Black. You know, real big comics in the UK and on a wider scale as well. So it's not just promoting local talent. These are some of the better comics out there. You know, you should be coming along and checking this night out. Like,
this is an open message to the people of Treorchy.
The besties is in Treorchy.
Yeah, stop. You've got an amazing facility in your hands, and you see some amazing talent coming through. So if you're in Treorchy and you're listening to this, take full advantage of that before.
Well, it is a use it or lose it type thing.
And it sucks that that's the case.
The guy who runs the venue, he's really supportive. He's looking at the long term, but ultimately, it's got to sort of show some sort of reward for his efforts in this. So hopefully it'll pick up and get that sort of momentum it deserves soon. It is a great room, and it's an asset locally for local acts. It's an asset locally for comedy fans, and it's a chance to, you know, bring bigger acts to Treorchy, really. So
Tales from Wales.
Yeah.
That's still going, but coming to an end, if I if my sources are correct, my sources being Stefan.
Yeah, we did five shows in the autumn, and three ended up getting cancelled due to one venue. The guy who booked it with us just stopped responding, so I just took that as sort of a
yeah.
Maybe it's not happening, which I don't understand really, because you can say, "Oh, look, it's not happening." I say, "All right then."
Yeah, exactly.
But people are ordering. And then two got pulled due to numbers, and two went ahead, which was, you know, I suppose, take away the one that got cancelled twelvefold. It's a 50, sort of 50 success rate there, which we thought, oh, we felt a bit disappointed with that. We thought, well, let's wrap it up with a bit of a bang and put on a last show. We'll still do stuff together. We'll still gig together.
I think. Yeah, of course.
It won't be a Tales from Wales sort of format beyond that, really. And I just thought a bit of a closing down sale type. Just say, we might encourage people to come, you know, sort of tell people it's never going to happen. Like, oh, I'll come then, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you could see it again next year if you wanted. Oh, I won't bother then. I think that's what you've got to do, really. Frighten people into coming.
Threaten people into enjoying themselves. And for the besties at home who may not be aware, what is Tales from Wales? So we have global listeners now as well since last time.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Well, it's Tales from Wales. I think I might have, we touched on this last time possibly. Tales from Wales is a show that myself and Stefan and quite frequently with the help of Carl Howarth as well, Chris Chopin's been involved and Cheap and Mash have been involved more recently too. It's just a sort of packaged sort of tour. I say tour loosely because I begrudge saying tour because we would go there and we go home again and then we'd do another one 2 months time. but a tour show or a package show that we could just take to a theatre, take to a rugby club, take to a comedy club, a backroom of a pub, whatever. Anywhere that it would work basically as a means of getting sort of paid, because at the time I just started doing paid gigs probably at the time. There's a chance of getting paid gigs in terms of like, you know, the ticket revenue, that sort of thing. But like longer sets, bigger rooms. We've done theatres in like West Wales theatres in England, things like that. And it was just an experience that came with that too, like sort of, but Tales from Wales is just a Welsh themed sort of stand-up show basically. But it was put together as a package that we could just approach a theatre. Can we do our show with you? Yeah, great. And then it would go from there. We'd have to, a lot of promotion went in it sort of off our own backs as well, because when you're sort of completely unknown, it is, you don't get bums on seats, so to speak. So it was a lot of effort with that way. But that was experience in itself, because you learned how to deal with theatres, how to sort of argue. No, I shouldn't have paused then, should I? How to argue that, you know, no, we're not hiring the room. We want 80-20 on the door, that sort of thing. And then people take it a bit more seriously and stuff. So it was a great experience in that sense. But yeah, Tales from Wales, sort of a Welsh-themed stand-up show, essentially. This worked for audiences, but even more so for us as a means of growing as an act, you know?
What I'm seeing a lot of in this conversation is you are someone who is willing to create the opportunities for yourself, not wait for them to come to you. You seem to be someone who is going out and making these things happen, because otherwise, as you say, you're just going to be waiting for it to happen.
Yeah, and I think, you know, not just at the risk of being sort of cliched and stuff, I think that is a good way to approach stuff, really. And I suppose you put it like that. That is how we've done things. It's like, you know, we got in touch with Fish, a theatre in Fishguard and put a show on there. And that was a turning point. I think we talked about this last time. So if anyone listened then, I apologise. But it was a bit of a turning point, that was, because we did the show in Cardiff Comedy Festival, and that was nice. But we filled the room full of friends.
Yeah.
And then we did it in Fishguard, and it was like a real audience, in inverted commas. You know, like people we didn't know, people who'd come out to pay for a stand-up show. And there wasn't me in the middle with other established comedians on the bill and a pro comp and that sort of thing. It was just me, Colin, Stefan. It was like, this is a quick make or break. Now this could really go badly wrong. Like, but it went great. And I think if it'd gone badly, it might have been a big knockback. But because it went well, it was a big push forward.
Yeah, exactly. So
it was a gamble, I suppose. It paid off, which was nice, really.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear it. Glad to see good people doing well. So I've started a new game. It's a very, very quick game, possibly the quickest game on the podcast. Would you like to play it?
Yeah, of course.
It's a celebrity's birthday today.
Right.
I'm thinking of one specific celebrity.
Okay.
You have to guess which one, and you're not allowed to ask me any other questions. Whose birthday is it today?
I can't ask any questions at all.
No, you just got to give me a name.
All right. And what day is it today?
It is Saturday the 9th.
Oh, shit.
Of February 2019.
And they weren't born today. They
it's no, yeah. Just a very famous baby.
The 9th of February 2019. Roger Moore.
Joe Pesci.
Oh, okay.
It's going to be good when that pays off. When someone finally...
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Do you want to care to guess how old Joe Pesci is today?
Oh, I reckon he is 69.
75.
Oh, okay, that's good.
It's a good game, that, isn't
it? So old Robert De Niro. Robert De Niro's about the same. Is he about 77, 75?
I don't know. It's not his birthday, so I don't care.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He's got to be in his 70s, but oh, there we are. So, happy birthday, Joe Pesci.
Happy birthday, Joe Pesci.
Yeah, hopefully he'd be celebrating by setting fire to his head and rubbing in the snow.
So, another thing we do on the Most Best podcast is have our friend, I'm host, you're co-host.
Yeah.
We have a third off-campus co-host, if you will, my friend Captain Chris. His job takes him all around the world, so he can very rarely be with us. But each week, I like him to send in a question for our in-studio co-host. So, are you ready to answer Captain Chris's big question?
Is he actually a captain of anything?
No, we've just known him as Captain Chris since we were kids. He's also known as Criminal Chris.
Yeah, okay. So if his name was Bill, he could have been potentially Burglar Bill or something like that. Yeah. Okay, fair enough, yeah. Captain Chris's big question. I'm ready. Yeah, I'm ready.
Let's do this. So another little wrinkle that I'm introducing onto this episode. I've got two questions from Chris.
Right.
What we're going to do is roll a six-sided die. Mm-hmm. And if it lands on an odd or even, determines what question I ask you.
So is one or the other?
It's going to be one or the other. Right, let's roll to find the question. 3, so it's an odd number. The question is, what is something that you have tried that you know you will never try again?
Oh, okay. Eating bugs, I think, in Thailand. Like, I went on holidays to Thailand. You know, very cliched sort of thing to do. Like, went to Thailand and, like, Cambodia and things like that. And they were selling on the Koh San Road or somewhere out there, selling, like, the bugs. They were frying the bugs and stuff and selling them. And I thought, oh, I'll try that. Because you've seen it on films and TV and different things. And you think, well, just because it's something I haven't eaten doesn't mean it's not a nice food, you know. Because some other countries don't eat certain things we eat as a general sort of thing. So I asked for a bag of these insects, and as he put them in the bag, he sprayed like flavour on them. Hang on. If he's having to spray flavour on them, perhaps they're not that good.
Was it just like a squirty bottle with flavour written on it?
It was like a little sort of like a bottle of hairdresser would have to put water on your hair.
Yeah, yeah.
That sort of thing. But it was like brown liquid in it. So it may have just been dirty. I don't know what it was. But he did that. I thought, if you're going to add the flavour to it, surely like chicken.
It should be cooked in the flavour.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and I started eating them, and it was just like legs and wings between my teeth. And then I was eating them for a little while, and I thought, well, why am I, this is just, I'm not even enjoying this. So I just tied the bag up and spun it and like threw it into a bar as I was walking past, because I was a bit drunk, you know, a bit childish. So, yeah, so I don't think I'll be doing that again, really.
I like how quickly that came to mind as well. That's something that's obviously stuck with you.
Yeah, it's something that I remember every now and again. I think, oh, I wouldn't do that again. So, yeah.
Would you say it's the worst thing you've ever eaten? Are you an adventurous eater? Because obviously, you know, you're willing to try eat bugs.
Yeah, like in the same holiday, I tried... We went to this... It was in Vietnam, part of the holiday. Went to a restaurant, and the menu was just... or written in Vietnamese. It was one that Vietnamese people went to rather than sort of, you know, Western tourists. And he was just looking at pictures and he had some snake. And that was really nice. So yeah, I'll try different things and give it a go, you know. On the logic of, if other people eat it, then it must be okay, you know.
So snake good.
Snake is good.
Bugs in brown water, no go.
Yeah, snake is sort of like, imagine a chew-it, but like meat flavoured.
It was a bit
like that. It was a bit like a sweet, like a sort of a chewy sweet that was meat flavored. It was nice. It was nice.
I don't know if I like that.
It was funny. Like the color of it was like when gravy congeals. Is it that sort of color?
Yeah.
It was nice. It was nice.
It doesn't sound very appealing. No. I'm not gonna lie. I was expecting to have more of a. I don't know why, like a fish kind of texture, like a flaky kind of thing, not a chewy sweet kind of texture.
But the snake is just sort of a length of muscle, isn't it? Yeah. Anyway, so, but what snake it was, I don't know. It must have been a reasonably substantially sized snake. It wasn't like a slow worm or anything like that. But, I don't know what snake it was. But yeah, I quite enjoyed it.
What type of bugs were they?
Oh, just your generic six legs, wings, just general insects, grasshoppers possibly. They sold scorpions as well, little scorpions. And I asked for a scorpion, but you had to pay extra for that. I didn't bother having the extra scorpion.
Excellent. That's what I love about Captain Chris's questions. We get these otherwise unheard anecdotes out of our co-hosts.
And what does he do that takes him around the world?
I can't say. I'll have to kill you.
Okay. Yeah, we discussed this because for those who are the besties listening, this is probably the...
I still love that.
Besties. So keep that if you want. It's fine. I like the classic thing people say to you, like after you've done finished a gig, people will often approach you. Normally, middle-aged men, I think. Gammon is a word that's been thrown around lately, as if like white middle-aged men who have sort of got like Daily Express type views and things. But
I've not heard that. Clarkson.
Yeah, Clarkson type bloke, taxi driver. On the scale of taxi driver to Clarkson, you know, so working class up to annoyingly posh but arrogant. Sort of.
Yeah,
that type of bloke. They'll often approach you after the gig and say, "Oh, I got a joke for you. I got a joke for you." What do you call a black? No, stop. But they'll continue, you know.
Yeah.
And then they go, "Oh, you can have that. I don't fucking want it." But yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's not yours to give away anyway.
But you can have besties if you want. But yeah, we discussed a couple of things about coming down, and you had to cancel for different reasons. And we did talk about like a would you rather type thing, but I thought something else is. It's based on one personal preference of my own.
Okay.
And like we said about besties, it's not a term I'd normally use. I think I want to call the section I'm So Over That.
I'm So Over That.
Yeah.
I'm going to come up with a theme song for this.
Yeah. It's basically just discussing things. I'm going to say something that I'm so over. I've had enough of. I think it's sort of passé. But everyone else likes it. And you've got to tell me why I'm wrong not to like it.
Okay, do I get to shoot one back at you?
Yeah,
then? 100%. Excellent, let's do because this.
I'll go first, and then it gives you a chance to think of one of your own. I'm so over the Foo Fighters.
I don't know if I necessarily can agree with you on that. It's really too
good, is it? I used to love the Foo Fighters when I was in my sort of teens and things, and they are a great band. You can't argue they're not. But so many people just... Oh, the Foo Fighters, oh my God, they're amazing. I'm going to go see them. And they release an album every 2 years. That's a decent album. And that's all they do now. And I'm so over the Foo Fighters. It's not for me. I just don't get it anymore.
I have a lot of love and respect for the Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
Because they are all from, you know, like when they first started, same as we were discussing earlier about people doing it on a local level. They were all in great... Like, you know, next to unheard punk bands. Obviously, Dave Grohl then went into Nirvana.
Yeah.
And to see, you know, guys like that on stadium stages and releasing, you know, a good album every few years. Mm. That documentary series they did you watch that?
Is it the Sonic Highways one?
Yeah, that was fascinating.
Sonic Highways was the last album of theirs I bought. I got all their albums up to Sonic Highways. I think I've missed one since then.
Possibly. I'm not sure.
I think there's one since then, but I knew there was a documentary that was around the same time. And I haven't watched that yet. Plus, I watched it on Netflix and I get home after my gig later. But not they're a great band. They are a great band, but I just don't get the sort of being. I'm not enamored by them anymore, like some people seem to be. I just don't get that.
I'm so over true crime documentaries.
Oh, right, that's tricky because there is a really sort of unique morbid interest with things like that. My wife likes a lot of that. She likes recording the worst serial killers type programs.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a massive difference between like you have the world's worst serial killers and a lot of them are in America. Then you have Britain's worst serial killers. And it's like, oh, Gary killed two men. And it's like, one was even on purpose. And it's like the difference between the American serial killers and the British ones is massive. But yeah, so true. Why don't you like true crime documentaries?
So I still like, same with you and Foo Fighters. I still, you know, it's something I've always been into. I still have a lot of love for it. But the one thing that's really tipped me off on it is the Ted Bundy tapes that they've just put on Netflix.
That's a big thing now, isn't it? I've heard a lot of people discussing that. I haven't watched it myself. I know who he is and what he did and stuff, but I haven't seen that yet.
If you were unaware of who he was and what he did and watched these documentaries, you would walk away going, he was a very charming, intelligent man. Shame about these women he killed, but he, you know, all in all, was quite an impressive character. Absolutely no mention of the fact that he was like a necrophile, all of the vile, twisted things he did. It was more focused on him representing himself in court and how he did have the potential to be a great man. He was just a bit wayward in as much as he'd smash women's skulls in.
Yeah, like he used his powers for bad instead of good. Like
there's even, like, at the time, there's footage of a judge going, it's a shame that we found ourselves in these circumstances because I would love to have seen you practice in my courtroom. And it's like, stop blowing this guy. Yeah, he's a serial killer.
Just charming everyone all the time, was he? And
yeah, it's, and the Netflix documentary just shows that side of it. They don't go really into the depth of the depravity and the pain and suffering that this man inflicted on the world. And that's what annoys me about it, is that they're really making it more about, hey, Ted's a handsome, cool guy.
Yeah. Okay, well, maybe a counter argument. I can get that. I do get that totally. I think with true crime dramas, especially serial killers, and why they've always got to fuck them as well. And it's like they do. They always go, it's like, oh, you got this, oh, I murdered him. It's like, I fucked him, then I murdered him. It's like, why have they got to do that? It's always sex in there somewhere. And the more depraved, like, what's his name? John Wayne Gacy? Is it the clown guy? It's like, it's got to be then young boys as well. It is horrible. And I always think about the families left behind and that sort of thing. And, you know, this person has damaged X amount of lives or whatever, you know. So for me, I don't enjoy that. But that's just, I think they are the sort of extreme end, and they have true crime dramas and things like that. Have you seen the old O.J. Simpson, I think it's called The People versus O.J. Simpson?
I've not seen that, no.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad you said no, because that can be sort of your, that can get you back into true triangles, because it hasn't got to be fucking and killing people.
It can just be killing a couple of people.
Yeah, but watch that with Cuba Gooding Jr. in it. It's great.
Oh, that's the one that was reenacted.
Yeah, it's essentially the story of what happens, and I don't think it adds to the story, but it does add to the story when the people kind of look like the people as well. The actors selected do look like sort of the real life people. Like Kim Kardashian's dad is played by David Schwimmer, and he's good in it. But yeah, honestly, it's really, really good. It's really interesting, because it's the trial, but there's all of the social aspects around it as well, with the, you know, the race issues in LA at the time and stuff. It's really interesting. It's really good. So I think that will be, I'll get you back into true crime dramas.
I saw an amazing documentary about the OJ, kind of about the OJ Simpson chase more than anything, not like the trial. Did you ever see the ESPN 30 for 30 documentaries?
I haven't. I know of them. I know there's a lot of them, with like Bo Jackson and Rick Flair. Like that. They know ones I've seen, because I've got no access. I could probably find them on YouTube, but I never ever watch YouTube unless it's on my phone to watch a song or a clip or something.
I won't
sit and watch extended things on YouTube, even though I can put it on my telly. I think, oh, it's not a real telly, so I only watch my Sky or my Netflix sort of thing. So I haven't seen them other than that, but there's I know of them.
A really good one, which is basically 24 hours, like a day, 24 hours in news coverage.
Yeah.
And there are all these amazing sporting events on throughout the day. I can't, you know, I don't want to say the specifics, because I'll clearly get it wrong, but, you know, global things. I'm pretty sure like World Cups and opening of the new baseball series and all these things. And it shows the footage of all these different news stations throughout the day and all this stuff building.
Interrupted by the...
And yeah, it turns out through the day, it turns out it's the day he goes on his chase, and how the news focus completely shifts to that. And it's, I can't remember what it's called, but if you can find that, that's an amazing one.
Oh, look out for that one. I'll flick it off my phone onto my television screen.
Hike!
What's that called when you... screen mirroring?
I have no idea. I've been trying to figure out if
my wife does that. My wife will show me to do that. She'll be good at that. But I've watched a really good OJ. I don't think it's made by BBC, but BBC have the rights to it in the UK. It's probably an iPlayer. I think it's called OJ Simpson Made in America.
Okay.
It's a series of like panorama. It's not panorama. It's I can't think of what it's called. It come to me. But it's really good. It's five episodes, hour and a half each, maybe 2 hours each. And the first episode is all about him as a football star. And that's like almost like a tribute to him as a football star. And then it goes on about him as a celebrity. And then about the race riots in Los Angeles and how that set the scene for the courtroom drama, because he was so loved, and he was a black sports star, but he didn't want to be considered as black. He wanted to be OJ.
Yeah.
Simpson, you know, they probably touched on that in the thing, and he wants to transcend, you know, he's a black guy, but he's in amongst all the white guys, and he was doing Alamo, the car rental service?
I think so, yeah.
Doing those adverts, and he was this sort of pioneering guy in that aspect. And then that all sort of come to a head then with this trial, and that's what made it so unique and so difficult for people to sort of process and see us, you know, in black and white, if that's the way of putting it. But yeah, it's really good, really interesting. But the first one is like a sports documentary.
Yeah.
And then it goes on from there, and it's good. Really good.
We've got nothing planned tonight.
Worth about 10 hours of your time.
I would say our plan for tonight is hunker down and just watch things. And I know Jem's been watching The Staircase on Netflix all day. So I think we might just dig out some OJ documentaries to make that
I'm sure it's on iPlayer. I'm sure it's on iPlayer. It's about 2 hours an episode. They're good. With all Jim.
So anything else that you are so was it so totally over?
I'm so over. Where's my so over? I only played one. I should have played more. The Foo Fighters is such a big one for me that I didn't prepare another one. I should have. I've led you on. I've let the besties down for this, Zach.
Well, I'm so totally over. The besties not helping push the cause. They're great, don't get me wrong. We have a lot of steady listeners, but we need you guys downloading episodes. Leave me a positive review if you like it. That is massively helpful. But there's only so much of this I can do by myself, goddammit. I need your interaction to help take the Most Best Podcast to the next level. And I couldn't ask for a better bunch of besties to do it with. So before we get out, Drew, once again, let people know where they can see you, where they can find videos, social media, whatever you want. Plug away.
My social media, Facebook is facebook.com/DrewTaylorLight. Same for Instagram and Twitter at DrewTaylorLight, L-I-T-E, like Bud Light, that sort of thing.
I was going to ask, the name Drew Taylor Light, is that a Razor Light joke?
No.
See, I read it the other day. I was like, I wonder if it's because it kind of sounds like Razor Light.
Drew Taylor Light, Razor Light. Yeah, I suppose. No, it's nothing to do with that. No, it's not.
There we go.
Thanks for pointing out. It's just because initially it was just my Twitter account, and Twitter at the time was only 164 characters, was it? So it was like small, bite-sized chunks of Drew, maybe.
Okay.
Perhaps being a bit too narcissistic there, I don't know. But yeah, that was the idea behind it. And then I just thought, well, if it's not broke, don't fix it sort of thing, and keep it simple. People can just access, find me the same way, you know, rather than having three different sort of handles or different things. It doesn't make sense, really. I'm always gigging locally in Wales and across the south of England, but sort of more specific things. I'm at Leicester Comedy Festival, as we mentioned, on the weekend of the 23rd and 24th of February at Richard III Visitor Centre and Big Stan's House on those 2 days. There's Mirth Comedy Festival coming up, which is really worth checking out if anyone's listening. Like the Mirth Comedy Festival Facebook page on Facebook. That's at the end of April, the 25th to 27th of April. I've got Zoe Lyons headlining that, so that should be worth looking out for. And then, come and support the Lion as well in Trokey, because that really is a user or loser type thing, and it's a club that deserves a good audience, you know, and a good following.
Fantastic. If you want more Most Best Podcast, all the social medias are at Most Best Podcast. You can download us on SoundCloud, Spotify, iTunes. I'm thinking of expanding to further podcast platforms, but I need people getting at me where they listen to their podcasts. Otherwise, I'm just screaming into the wind. But apart from that, Drew, thank you for coming down and being one of our return co-hosts.
Yeah, no problem. I come back again in about 10 months' time, and we can just do a little check in every 10 months or so.
Let's see how different the podcast goes each time. Yeah. Excellent. Thanks for coming down, buddy.
Nice one, Zach.